You are about to enjoy a walking tour of downtown Smithfield, where you'll learn all about this area's rich history. This promenade along Church Street will tell you the story of Smithfield and Isle of Wight County from the early 1600s to present day. Before we begin our adventure, let's review a few logistics. Your iPod has been primed for you by a member of the Isle of Wight County Historic Resources staff. If at any time your iPod stops responding, return to the Isle of Wight County Museum for assistance. Now look at your iPod. If you squeeze the top of the steel clip, you'll see that you can attach the iPod to an article of your clothing. To adjust the volume, click the plus or minus keys on your earphone controls. To pause the audio at any time, single-click the button between the plus and minus signs. To restart the audio, single-click that same button. In your possession, you also have a map showing the route and stops of our tour. This walk is 1 mile in length. It will conclude at the museum and last approximately 45 minutes. Please remember that the museum closes at 4 p.m., Monday through Saturday, and 5 p.m. on Sundays. You will need to complete your tour 10 minutes before closing. During your tour, please note that the places that you see represent the founding of Smithfield and Isle of Wight County. As you walk, try to envision the street as it would have appeared during the time period described. Some of the sound effects you hear may help recall times of dusty roads, planked walkways, and a bustling riverfront. When you are ready to start your tour, please step outside the museum for an orientation. Pause the recording here until you are ready to begin. Welcome to Smithfield and Isle of Wight County. During the 16th and 17th centuries, various European countries competed to establish permanent colonies in North America. While the Spanish and French already had a foothold in the New World, England achieved success in 1607 at Jamestown. A site located on the James River, 40 miles inland from the Chesapeake Bay and Atlantic Ocean. In the settlement's early years, colonists struggled with leadership, hostile relations with the natives, basic survival skills, and sustainability. In 1608, Captain John Smith went in search of food for his fellow colonists. A jaunt to the south side of the James River, to present-day Isle of Wight County, led him to an Indian village at Burwell's Bay. The Native American inhabitants there were known as the Wariskoyak, and were part of the Powhatan chiefdom. They provided 14 bushels of corn for the starving settlers. After Jamestown, the first English plantations were established along the south shore within present-day Isle of Wight by Puritan colonists. In 1619, Captain Christopher Lawn was given a patent and arrived in Jamestown on April 27th with 100 settlers. They settled across the James River near the mouth of what is now called Lawn's Creek. They called the settlement Isle of Wight Plantation after their island home off the coast of England. In 1621, Edward Bennett, a wealthy merchant from London, founded a plantation at the lower end of the Wariskoyak Bay, and Captain Nathaniel Bassey settled an area on the Pagan Creek, known as Bassey's Choice. On Good Friday, March 22, 1622, disaster struck both sides of the James River. By midday, a Native American attack had claimed the lives of 347 of the 1,240 English settlers. As a result, most settlements were abandoned, and 80 plantations were reduced to a mere 8. Ultimately, the Wariskoyak were driven from their land in 1622 and 1627 as part of the reprisals for the 1622 incident. By 1634, the colony numbered 5,000 inhabitants and consisted of 8 shires. Shires, which were later designated counties, were based on a form of local government used in England, whereby each had its own local officers. Wariskoyak Shire was renamed Isle of Wight County in 1637. Isle of Wight County is one of 5 that has essentially survived in its continuous political form, give or take a few boundary adjustments, thus making it one of the oldest county governments in the United States. Upon exiting the museum, turn right and proceed down Main Street and Wharf Hill toward the Pagan River to the Todd House at 22 Main Street. This stop is the third house on the left once you cross the street. It is two houses past the yellow Victorian bed and breakfast mansion on the main. Look for stop number 2 through the trees. You may wish to pause your recording here until you arrive. In 1637, Arthur Smith was given a patent for 1,450 acres in Isle of Wight County. In 1750, his descendant Arthur Smith IV was granted permission to sell a portion of the land for the creation of a town. Named Smithfield, this town consisted of 4 streets and 72 lots. 2 lots near the center of town were to be used for a courthouse. The county and town grew as a result of trade and commerce that sailed through the shores of the Pagan River, a tributary of the James. Wharves and warehouses grew up along the shore, and vessels sailed in and out of Smithfield from foreign and domestic ports, bringing with them news and various imports such as sugar, spices, chocolate, coffee, tea, and liquor. Merchants, who maintained close ties with other seaports, sold these items in their stores and helped facilitate the export of goods such as tobacco, tar, pitch, turpentine, wood, shingles, and ham. This trading system fueled the New World's economic engine. In front of you stands the Todd House. A cabinet maker by the name of Nicholas Parker built the left wing of this structure around 1753. Later it became the home of Captain Mallory Todd. Born in Bermuda, Todd, according to family lore, left home at an early age, became a mariner, and ultimately owned several vessels that traded with the American colonies. By 1767, he was living in Smithfield and married to Angela Mallory. Reportedly, the basement was used as his store, and there is an area inside where it is said he salted and prepared hams. Note the decorative pediment depicting wine cups above the doorway to the right. In addition, it is adorned with 13 stars to symbolize the original 13 states. Although hams made their way across the Atlantic in the 1600s, Todd is credited with the creation of the first curing and shipping business of Smithfield hams. But first, a few words about pigs. Christopher Columbus sailed to the New World from Spain with 8 pigs, and it was Hernando de Soto who brought 13 hogs to Florida. Since that time, swine have flourished in North America. A relatively easy animal to raise, the pig was a staple for most farmers by the 17th century. The English who settled here brought with them their own methods of food preservation and learned a few new methods from the natives. These processes melded to result in the salt and hardwood smoked dry-cured Smithfield ham, a product that keeps indefinitely and without refrigeration. It was the perfect food for export. As early as 1779, Todd, from the comfort of his own basement, was shipping hams to the West Indies. Hams were shipped by the barrel, and by 1786, Todd had purchased the lot next door for the purpose of expanding his home. In addition, he built a packing house near the Pagan River. The latter, a wooden structure, was home to the Todd Ham Company for 121 years. On September 25, 1907, Todd's grandson, who had been running the company, passed away, and the Todd Company ceased to exist. The Todd brand name, however, continued to be used for many years, as the smokehouse was leased for the processing of commercial hams until 1937. The packing house remained on the property until it was razed in the 1950s. Currently, the former Todd home is privately owned. At this time, please head back up the hill and turn left on South Church Street. You may wish to pause the recording here until you arrive at stop number 3, at 117 South Church Street. The house you are looking for is made of brick. One 117 South Church Street is known as the Wentworth Barrett House. It was one of the first buildings to be erected in the newly formed town of Smithfield, and it was the home of Captain Samuel Wentworth, a ship captain who traded with the planters in the county for many years. The large lot stands on the bluff overlooking the Pagan River, and it runs down to the water where there was a warehouse and dock. This large lot suggests that the captain was a wealthy man. This wonderful example of Georgian architecture is deceptive in its appearance. It looks as if it may be 1.5 stories, but in reality, it's a 4-story building. It has a full basement, 2 floors, and an attic. At the end of the 18th century, the 13 colonies in North America continued to grow and flourish. However, starting in the 1760s, tension grew between Great Britain and the colonies, and in 1775, war erupted. In Isle of Wight, citizens felt the impact of the new laws and taxes imposed by the British. Most citizens wanted their freedom from the British, although others were opposed to the idea of independence. A Scotsman by the name of George Purdy, a loyalist and prominent merchant of Smithfield, was called before the Committee of Safety for Isle of Wight to answer charges regarding his loyalty. Purdy did not attend, as he had heard that he would have been tarred and feathered regardless of guilt or innocence. There is no evidence that Purdy ever reported to the committee, and despite his political leanings and charges, his position in the community was not marred. He continued to serve as a county justice, and following the war, he was appointed postmaster of Smithfield. Also at this time, Isle of Wight County refortified the castle. This fort, located on the James River's Burwell's Bay, just north of Smithfield, approximately 4.5 miles from where you are now standing, was constructed in 1623. It was built to protect the settlements from Native Americans and raiding Spaniards. Once refortified, it was renamed Fort Boykin for Major Francis Boykin, who was then serving on General George Washington's staff. In 1779 and 1780, a series of raids marked the shift in British strategy to move the war to the southern colonies. These raids brought about the muster of local militia, who stood at the ready to meet the threat of the British. In December 1780, an army of Loyalists, Hessians, and British troops, under the command of General Benedict Arnold, sailed into Hampton Roads and to Richmond, which they burned. They sailed back to Isle of Wight County and landed at Lawns Creek, marched toward Smithfield, and were engaged by militia troops under the command of local Colonel Josiah Parker at Mackey's Mill. In 1781, the British soldier, cavalryman, and politician, Lieutenant Colonel Bannister Tarleton, attempted a raid on the Smithfield Courthouse. Considerable damage was inflicted, but court records were spared by the wife of the acting clerk of the court. She placed the records in a trunk and buried them on a farm near the grist mill on present-day Route 10. In October of that same year, the British took position at Yorktown, where they were soon forced to surrender, essentially ending the war. Let us now walk down Church Street just a bit further to meet one of Smithfield's more flamboyant characters. Please pause your recording here until you arrive at stop number 4, 335 South Church Street. This home, owned by Captain John Sinclair from 1778 to 1796, is a nice example of simpler Georgian-style architecture. Born in 1775 in Elizabeth City County, or present-day Hampton, Sinclair was a noteworthy shipowner, merchant ship captain, farmer, entrepreneur, privateer, and alleged pirate. Pirates and privateers differ subtly, but the main distinction is clear. While a pirate robs by sea under no one's authority, a privateer's acts of robbery and violence are under the orders of a ruling nation. From the 16th to the 19th centuries, the major ruling counties of the world employed privateers to bring home money and curb illegal piracy. Both pirates and privateers would attack ships and towns for plunder, but privateers were to perform as such only when the target belonged to a hostile nation. Following the Continental Congress's 1775 resolution allowing the use of privateers in colonial waters, Sinclair was asked by a friend and neighbor, Josiah Parker, to use his sloop for this task. Sinclair was one of approximately 100 privateers in Virginia. Their vessels were used mainly to patrol and raid merchant ships, Privateers also ran blockades, meaning that they worked to evade an enemy blockade in order to transport cargo. Sinclair received a percentage of the supplies that he was able to bring to Smithfield, and as his efforts were so successful, he was able to purchase this home for a sum of £350. After the war, Sinclair made a living running a ferry boat. Compared to his eventful wartime career, this task bored him to tears. So in 1794, he began construction of a new sloop, a vessel 65 feet in length, named the Unicorn. Rumor had it that Sinclair intended to aid the French against the British and continue his privateering career. In fact, Sinclair attempted to apply for dual citizenship in France. Word of this reached the British Council in Norfolk, who quickly drafted a letter to the governor warning that such actions would breach United States neutrality in the conflict. In turn, the governor sent orders to the local port surveyor, Copeland Parker, who investigated the ship and her captain. Copeland was the younger brother of Sinclair's friend Josiah Parker, and he was courting Sinclair's youngest daughter, Elizabeth. This was small-town politics at its finest. Regardless, Copeland conducted a thorough search of the ship and her captain. His report generated a visit by the commissioner for the governor to Isle of Wight, Colonel Commandant James Wills. Wills also happened to be good friends of Sinclair. Quickly, the report was dismissed by Wills, stating, "He solely declared to me that the ship was not intended for a privateer." All was well until the governor sent soldiers to seize the vessel, all contraband, armaments, ordnance, and weaponry. Upon their arrival, Sinclair announced that if searched, he would put the first man to death. Reinforcements were requested. The governor also ordered Brigadier General John Marshall to assist in the search and collect information. Marshall, who later became a Supreme Court justice, marched into Smithfield with his cavalry and stationed himself in front of Sinclair's house until Sinclair allowed the men to search the home. Findings included 15 muskets, 13 cannon, grape shot, and powder. Three additional pieces of ordnance were stationed on the shore. Sinclair was taken to Richmond, but charges were dismissed due to his good service during the war. Regardless, Sinclair never forgave Copeland Parker for the problems his report brought and subsequently forbade his daughter from seeing him. On Sinclair's first voyage out of town, Elizabeth eloped with her beloved. Sinclair proceeded to cut her from his will. A month after the incident, Sinclair sold his home and moved approximately 50 miles north to Gloucester County, where he died in 1820. At this time, please continue down Church Street to stop number 5, the boardwalk shops at Smithfield Station. Please pause the recording until you arrive. Stop 5 offers you a chance to take a break. Here on the banks of the Pagan River, you are now at the boardwalk shops of Smithfield Station. The station was built to resemble the old Coast Guard life-saving stations found along the Virginia and North Carolina coasts, thus giving the complex the name Station. Note the screw pile lighthouse to the right of the station. This guest room was built to resemble a lighthouse found near Hooper Strait in Maryland. Feel free to browse these specialty shops. Enjoy the view, stop for lunch, or partake of an indulgent treat before continuing your tour. When ready to continue your tour, please cross Church Street to arrive at stop number 6, Windsor Castle Park. Please pause the recording now and continue once you cross the street carefully. In front of you is the bridge to Windsor Castle Park, a 200-plus acre park developed by Joseph Luter III, the founder and former CEO of Smithfield Foods. Dedicated in 2010, the Riverside Park features a woodland trail system, dog park, kayak canoe launch, fishing pier, bike path, and historic Windsor Castle. Through the trees, you can make out the manor house, which sits within the complex of agricultural buildings and fields. The house overlooks the junction of the Pagan River and Cypress Creek, and it was the home of Smithfield's founder, Arthur Smith IV. Though architectural evidence of the structure's colonial origins remains, a precise date of the construction has not been established. However, Windsor Castle is an excellent example of a colonial Tidewater Virginia farm remodeled around 1840. Outbuildings include a kitchen, smokehouse, granary, stable, well, and corn crib. Feel free to pause your recording at this time to explore the park. When you're ready, please proceed to stop number 7, 352 South Church Street, and begin your walk back up the hill. Stop number 7, 352 South Church Street. It is believed that the home in front of you was constructed in 1800. It is a nice example of Federal-style architecture. After the sale of Boykin's Tavern to Willis Woolley in 1831, 352 South Church Street became the home of Colonel Francis Boykin's widow, Fanny Godwin Boykin. Colonel Boykin was a distinguished military officer during the War of 1812, and his father, Major Boykin, served with General George Washington and Patrick Henry during the Revolutionary War. An Isle of Wight native, Major Boykin grew up on a nearby plantation. During the Revolutionary War, he was a patriot and an officer, commissioned a first lieutenant in Patrick Henry's regiment in January 1776. After the war, he became a leader in the county and was instrumental in moving the county seat from Smithfield to its current location on Route 258, approximately 7 miles from where you're now standing. Major Boykin was a delegate to the General Assembly in Richmond, and at the request of his constituents, he requested that the courthouse, located in Smithfield, move to his plantation site. In order to facilitate this decision, he offered to bear the expense for building the new courthouse. This request was agreed to, and construction began in 1799, completed in 1801. Conveniently, Boykin's Tavern was located next door for needed meals, refreshments for courthouse officers, personnel, and travelers. The tavern served as a place to hold court while the new courthouse was under construction. Major Boykin died in 1805, and his son died in 1817, leaving a wife and 4 children. At this time, you may begin walking toward our next stop. Stop number 8 is 304 South Church Street, the large green Queen Anne home. During your walk, you may listen to the information that follows. During the War of 1812, the United States clashed with Great Britain again, this time over a multitude of reasons, including trade restrictions. Local militia groups within Isle of Wight were called to serve the war effort. The Hampton Roads area was of strategic interest due to its numerous ports, and the James River was an important hub for commerce as well as for access to Richmond, Virginia's capital. British troops attempted and failed to invade Isle of Wight only once during the conflict. The British did anchor the man-of-war HMS Plantagenet off the coast to keep an eye on the area. By the 19th century, growth was notable in Smithfield and Isle of Wight County. Although still primarily agricultural, the 1860 census showed the population of 9,977 people. The documented breakdown includes 5,037 whites, 1,370 free blacks, and 3,570 slaves. Virginia seceded from the Union on April 17, 1861, and at once Isle of Wight local militia formed and took to the field. Very few able-bodied male citizens were left in the county. During the war years, the county saw most of its action on the home front. By the end of 1863, essentials were in short supply, and items such as salt, cloth, and yarn were scarce. The summer's growing season had not been fruitful, and the county's slave population, the labor source for agriculture, had declined substantially. However, the county did see some action during the Civil War. Forts Boykin and Eugene were a part of the Confederate defense along the James River. When Confederate Major General John Bankhead Magruder's Peninsula defensive line was abandoned on May 4, 1862, Union forces focused their attention on other area Confederate forts, blocking their advance towards Richmond, the Confederate capital. The Union trained their guns on Fort Eugene and Fort Boykin. Despite accurate cannon fire from those forts, they were no match for the heavy enemy shelling in May 1862. From ironclads and other warships of the Union fleet. The bombardments convinced Confederate forces that these forts were untenable, and they were abandoned. January 1864 marked the Battle of Smithfield. The Union gunboat Smith Briggs landed on the banks of the Pagan River, where you can now find the Smithfield Station. Union troops unloaded and marched toward Smithville, but were pushed back by local Confederates. The Union soldiers discovered upon their retreat that their gunboat had left them behind. And the next day, when the Confederates discovered that the Union troops were still in town, they surrounded them and prepared for the Union surrender. It was then that the Smith Briggs was spotted returning. After ordering women and children of the town into a basement for cover, Confederate Major Sturtevant opened fire straight down Main Street. Shots ensued for 45 minutes until Union forces scrambled to get aboard the USS Smith Briggs. One shot through the steam chest of the vessel caused the Smith Briggs to run up the white flag of surrender and drift to the other side of the Pagan River, where it was lodged in the mud. Union soldiers were taken prisoner. Dr. John R. Purdy and local women took care of the wounded temporarily, and only one Confederate soldier's life was lost. Set afire, the USS Smith Briggs was blown to pieces when the flames hit the ammunition on board. Before the explosion, a Confederate cavalryman pulled the Gilded Eagle figurehead from the ship. It is now on display at the 1750 Courthouse on Main Street. Molly Chalmers, a local townsperson, recalled that Yankee coffee was enjoyed in Smithfield that night for the first time in many months. The war ended April 9, 1865, in Appomattox. To date, it remains the deadliest war in American history. At this time, you should be near 304 South Church Street. If you haven't yet reached this destination, please pause your recording at this time until you arrive at stops number 8 and 9. Stop number 8 is the large light green Queen Anne home, and stop 9, which is just beyond it, is white. In front of you stands the P.D. Gwaltney Jr. House. This house combines many different architectural details found in various styles of Victorian houses. Please notice the extensive use of stained glass and ornamental decoration just below the roof on the turret and the turreted porch area. Built between 1900 and 1901, this exceptional example of Victorian Queen Anne-style house exhibits typical features such as the two-story projecting bays with front-facing gables, the corner turret, a wraparound porch, and classical detailing. Since the days of Mallory Todd, other businesses formed, produced, and marketed hams. The distinctive taste, attributed to oak and beech mast as well as peanuts, was also capitalized upon by the V.W. Joyner Company, the Tazewell T. Spratley Company, and the Smithfield Ham and Products Company. The famous Gwaltney name begins with P.D. Gwaltney Jr.'s father, Pembroke Decatur Gwaltney Sr. Born in 1836 in Surrey County, Gwaltney had a gunsmithing business in 1859 in Norfolk. After serving with the Surrey Light Artillery Unit during the Civil War, he moved to Smithfield and formed a partnership with his cousin. Gwaltney and Delk was a retail mercantile business, and they sold cured and smoked hams, sides, and shoulders. They also purchased peanuts from local farmers. Their partnership dissolved in 1875, but Gwaltney retained the store, smokehouse, sheds, and wharf property on Commerce Street. Hams were still sold as a specialty item in the store. As of 1890, Gwaltney devoted his attention to the peanut cleaning and shipping business. In 1891, he merged his business with Augustus Bunkley to become the Gwaltney Bunkley Peanut Company. During the 1903 peanut season, the company processed 45 million pounds of peanuts and attained the status of the largest peanut business in the world. Nuts were cleaned and shipped internationally, and prosperity reigned along the waterfront as evidenced by the general stores, stables, fish and meat markets, blacksmith shops, and bars. In 1911, the company merged with the Bain Peanut Company in Wakefield, Virginia, and became the American Peanut Corporation. P.D. Gwaltney Sr. died 4 years later, in 1915. Disaster struck on August 17, 1921, when a fire started in Factory No. 1. By noon, all but one block of Commerce Street was ashes and rubble. The smell of burnt peanuts filled the air, and melted lard ran into the streets, and the foul odor lingered for weeks. With the founder gone and with no railroad facilities in Smithfield, the peanut business packed up and relocated to Suffolk. While his father focused on peanuts, P.D. Gwaltney Jr. managed the store and expanded the meatpacking business by modernizing the curing and smoking buildings located behind the store. He began a worldwide marketing campaign for the hams, and as the business grew, so did the notoriety of the town. By 1906, it was necessary to enlarge the smokehouses and meat plants. By 1919, the P.D. Gwaltney Jr. and Company sold over 295,000 pounds of smoked pork products. Gwaltney's famous pet ham currently resides in the Isle of Wight County Museum. In 1902, a cured ham was overlooked, and for 20 years it hung from the rafters in one of his packing houses. By 1924, his pet ham was kept in an iron safe, which was opened daily for guests to view. Advertised as the world's oldest ham, Gwaltney fashioned a brass collar for the ham and took it to shows and expos to exhibit the preservation powers of his smoking method. The ham was featured in Ripley's Believe It or Not in 1932. The business continued in the Gwaltney family until it was acquired by Smithfield Foods in 1983. Gwaltney's home, constructed with his careful supervision, attention to detail, and personal correspondence with all suppliers, took 2 years to build. The documentation of this process still survives today. His father's home is just next door. Please cross Jericho Road to 226 South Church Street. This is stop number 9. This is stop number 9. Also Victorian in style, Gwaltney Sr.'s house was built in 1876. Note the third floor balconied turret and the eyebrow window. These were popular in Queen Anne designs for the purpose of shedding light in attics. When you're ready, please proceed to stop number 10, 212 South Church Street. Pause the recording here until you arrive. Originally founded as a seaport, Smithfield and its waterfront were once a lively and prosperous shipping center. The comings and goings of vessels and sailors was a common scene, and it continued through the steamboat era, which ended with the onset of World War I. Dating back to 1819 and dubbed sightseeing excursions, steamboats traveled to Smithfield's port from Norfolk. However, produce and passengers seeking transport to such places as Richmond and Baltimore were usually carried on packet lines, which maintained regular schedules. Regular steamboat service came into being in 1874 with round-trip service between Smithfield, Norfolk, Hampton, and Old Point Comfort. This house was built in 1877 for Captain O.G. Delk, Gwaltney Sr.'s former business partner, Civil War veteran, and captain of one of the steamboats which served the port of Smithfield. His home exhibits some common Victorian architectural detail, such as stained glass windows, a turret, and floor-to-ceiling windows on the first floor. Delk had a few maritime disasters during his sailing career. His 158-foot sidewheeler Isle of Wight, loaded down with peanuts on August 31, 1895, caught fire on the dock and burned to the waterline. The wreckage was raised and taken to Newport News Shipbuilding and Dry Dock Company for repairs. Although once there, it was realized that the steamer had sustained too much damage to warrant a rebuild. When operating the Accomack, Delk collided with another steamer by the name of Luray and sank in Hampton Roads. The Accomack was raised and repaired. Delk was, in spite of these misfortunes, looked upon favorably by the Old Dominion Steamship Company. He served them for 26 years and died in 1906. Steamboats from afar provided more than commerce and transportation. James Adams launched the first steamboat on the Atlantic coast on January 27, 1914. With the expense of developing a floating theater, Adams had no rivals in his sector of the entertainment business. The James Adams Floating Theater visited the town of Smithfield 12 times throughout its career. Edna Ferber spent 4 days aboard the James Adams Floating Theater to gather ideas and background for her novel Showboat, which was published in 1926. A crushing blow was dealt to water transportation and to the steamboat era when the James River Bridge opened in 1928. Please continue back up Church Street towards the corner of Main Street and Church. At the corner, take a left and walk towards our final stop, the old courthouse of 1750 at 130 Main Street. As you walk in that direction, look across the street toward Christ Episcopal Church, located at 111 South Church Street. We passed it as we made our way down towards the waterfront and Windsor Castle. The Episcopal Church was founded in 1832 when Mallory Moore Todd, son of the ham purveyor, bought this lot to establish a sister church to historic St. Luke's Church. His records indicate that members of St. Luke's were anxious to establish a church within the town limits of Smithfield. Historic St. Luke's Church, circa 1632, and located 4 miles south of Smithfield's historic district, is the oldest existing church of English foundation in America. It is this country's only surviving original brick Gothic church. Please pause your recording at this time until you arrive at our final stop, stop number 11, the old courthouse of 1750. Welcome to the old courthouse. Built in 1750, this courthouse was the first building erected in the town of Smithfield. It served as the county courthouse until 1800, when Major Boykin worked to relocate the center of government 7 miles to the southwest. The plan for the building was one in general use for courthouses throughout the area. However, this one features a distinctive semicircular apse, popular in English churches of the era. This may have been copied from Williamsburg's capital, which burned in 1749. In fact, when Williamsburg began restoration of their building in 1928, they studied this structure extensively. To the left of the courthouse is the brick clerk's office. Behind are the jails, stocks, pillory, and whipping post. Also there is a large oak known as the hangman's tree. The lot in front of the building was the courthouse green. In 1812, the building was converted into a residence. Changes and modifications ensued during the following years, and in the 1960s, the courthouse was restored to its original floor plan by the Association for the Preservation of Virginia Antiquities, now known as Preservation Virginia. The courthouse is open for tours. Please check their schedule for availability. This concludes our walking tour program. Please return to the Isle of Wight County Museum with your iPod and enjoy the museum's exhibits. Look inside for Gwaltney Jr.'s famous ham, his father's peanut, and a Tuscan jar which once contained rations of olive oil for British sailors. The museum is housed in the former Bank of Smithfield, first chartered in 1891. The original bank in this spot burned in 1912, and a new building was erected in 1913. The exterior is comprised of Marvilla marble and Indiana limestone. The building itself is an artifact with wonderful early 20th century classical revival details, including a Tiffany-style stained glass dome. In 1977, the Bank of Smithfield built a new brick colonial building next door, now the Bank of Southside, Virginia, and the museum moved to this building the following year. Featured exhibits at the museum include prehistoric fossils, Native American and colonial artifacts, and a country store. You might like to learn more about the Boykin family at their tavern, or you might enjoy a visit to Fort Boykin or Fort Eugene. Please feel free to ask a staff member at the museum for any assistance you might need. You may also visit Smithfield and Isle of Wight County Tourism at 319 Main Street. They have detailed information on everything there is to do here during your visit. Whatever your plans, please enjoy the rest of your time here in Smithfield and Isle of Wight County. This walking tour was written and produced by Isle of Wight County's Division of Historic Resources. It was recorded, voiced, and edited by Brett England. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening and strolling with us back in time.